This audio file is copyrighted 2008 by AboutFaxNet and its licensors. All rights are reserved.
Hey, our guest is Dr. Bruce Maccabee, the famous photo analyst and UFO researcher. Hello, Dr. Maccabee. It's nice to talk to you again.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. We all know that you are pretty busy analyzing UFO photos, but I'd like to know your feelings about the wave of UFO sightings that we've been experiencing in the last couple of years. Do you think that any of them might be extraterrestrial?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. Of course, we've been having a wave of sightings in the last few years, but we've had waves of sightings over the past 60 years, starting in 1947. And perhaps in 1947, the only thing that changed was that all of a sudden they became flying saucers as opposed to just unusual things in the sky, like have been reported over hundreds of years, I guess. I suspect that extraterrestrials or something, other intelligences, if you don't want to be specific about extraterrestrials, just say other intelligences are demonstrating their presence around the world and have for at least last 60 years and maybe a few thousand years. Who knows?
What do you think a UFO, why do you think a UFO would hover over an airport gate at the O'Hare Airport, supposedly, and have you ever gotten to see any photos of it?
Well, there were a couple of photos that people weren't absolutely sure about, I believe, related to the so-called O'Hare Airport incident that was November 2006, which became publicized in early January of 2007, where a grayish circular object was observed by a number of people, apparently, to be hovering over, I think it was the Seagate or something, at O'Hare Airport. Now, why would it do that? I'm not them, I can't say, but I can make a guess. I wanted somebody to see them briefly enough to make it a worthwhile sighting without staying there for so long that it absolutely could not possibly be explained. The explanations that were offered were, first of all, that there was light from the airport reflected off clouds, which doesn't make any sense because the object was described as being darker than the clouds, sort of a grayish disk seen against the cloud background, a uniform overcast at about 4:30 in the afternoon, I think it was, and November 14th, I think it was, in 2006. And so light on the clouds didn't impress anybody, and then the official explanation was, well, some kind of weather phenomenon. And, okay, what kind of weather phenomenon could do that? Look like a disk hovering at some altitude, 1,600 or 1,700 feet, and then suddenly shooting upwards and punching a hole in the clouds.
Right. Do you think that maybe if we look back at some of these sightings that have taken place over the years, does it look to you like maybe these UFOs want to get their presence felt with the general public, and that's why they're doing this?
Well, it appears to me that this is trickle-up. Trickle-up acceptance or trickle-up knowledge, learning, information, whatever you want to call it. Instead of top-down where they land at the White House lawn, go to the president and say, take me to your leader or we are your leader, whichever one they say. instead of having that, which would be sort of a trickle-down situation, they are showing their presence, have been for years apparently, showing their presence to the ordinary people of the society. And by doing this, they sort of inform individual people of their existence without doing it on a scale that might cause a panic. As long as things are explainable, people can go about their daily lives and say, well, maybe there was something there, maybe there wasn't, but who cares? It's not going to impact on me. If something lands on the White House lawn and the president and a few major news organizations all see this thing and publicize it widely, then you know, that could cause a panic, especially when you realize that the president would have to say, well, they're here and there's nothing we can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they tried it with the president already. It's now being reported that the UK has contacted the U.S., and we have sent FBI agents to them on loan who have the assignment of investigating UFOs to see if they can come up with any answers. Do you believe this statement?
Well, I would be very surprised if it were true. You say somebody is saying that. I don't know who
yeah,
it is.
They're reporting it on the Internet in some places. Yeah.
The FBI got involved with the UFO subject way back in 1947 when they were directly asked by the Air Force in July of 1947 to investigate the witnesses who were reporting, people reporting UFO, or what was called flying saucers in those days. People who were reporting flying saucers were, some number of them were interviewed by the FBI to find out if there was any communist subversion going on. The Air Force was worried that communist sympathizers might be generating spurious stories of fantastic craft flying through our air with the implication that they could be Soviet in order to undermine the confidence of the American people in the ability of the Air Force to control things in the skies. So the Air Force went directly to J. Edgar Hoover, through a liaison person, went to the head of the FBI and said, could you interview some of these witnesses? And so the FBI did interview people for about 2 months and then found there was no evidence of communist subversion that they could find, and they got out of it. They acted like a collection agency. They collected information from the Air Force for a number of years afterwards, and some of the information in the FBI X file, in which there were actual documents marked Security Matter -X, the real X files. They had the real X files contained interviews of a number of witnesses to flying saucers. But as I said, the FBI didn't find any evidence of communist subversion going on, so they stopped interviewing people. Nevertheless, they collected information from the Air Force for a number of years, and some of that information is found in the FBI file and not anywhere else. But the FBI has continually said since that they have not been involved with the subject, and to imagine that they would go to Britain to investigate is, I'd say, a bit of a stretch. I can't imagine why they would do that. They, first of all, don't think that flying saucers come within the purview of the investigative capabilities of the FBI. And second of all, even if they did think that they could investigate flying saucers here in the United States,
that's for sure.
Why would they do it in Britain?
Right.
I mean, Britain has its own MI6 and so on, MI5. The intelligence or agencies in Britain are as good as anybody else in tracking down, I don't know what they would be tracking down with respect to flying saucer sightings in Britain, but anyway, I doubt that the FBI is actually doing that.
Mm-hmm. The Disclosure Project is an organization trying to get the facts about UFOs. It has many... Disclosure Project.
Oh, Disclosure, yes.
Mm-hmm. It has had many honorable people testify about UFOs. Most of the general public is still unaware about it, even though they have taken testimony before the press club in Washington. Why do you think it doesn't get more publicity?
Well, that's a good question. The Coalition for Freedom of Information also had a press conference about a year ago in Washington, D.C., in which they invited a number of Air Force and aircraft pilots from around the world, literally, South America and Europe and the United States and Canada and so on. And these people were involved in some really potent sightings, including a guy by the name of Parvez Jafari, who was a pilot of a F-4 jet over Iran in 1976 when they chased some object that looked like it was shooting a missile back at the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And the airplane found that suddenly it lost communications with the headquarters, and the guy said he was in communications with his back seater, the person in the back seat of the rear of the aircraft. Anyway, these are well-reported, well-investigated sightings that were presented by the witnesses themselves before the assembled press, shall we say, and it got no more than a little bit of a short, brief stories here and there in the press. And I think the reason the press doesn't push on this is that the story is too big to handle. They realize that if they were to take a positive attitude towards the subject, well, they might look, make them look like they're idiots for one thing, for sort of believing it. But the other aspect is the effect on society of treating this seriously. You know, the way the media portrays this subject generally is as entertainment. It's entertaining to laugh at these nuts who talk about flying saucers and aliens and abductions and stuff. But to think, consider it to possibly be serious, now that's something else. But we have seen in the last couple of years more of a motion towards being serious about it. And the upcoming Discovery Channel shows put on by the MUFON, Mutual UFO Network. Let's see, that's on December 13th, I believe it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
On the Discovery Channel at 10 p.m. Or 9 p.m. Two shows, total of 4 hours of stuff they're doing. Two in-depth studies of UFO sightings. And this sort of reporting that we've been seeing on the History Channel, numerous documentaries on the History Channel and the Discovery Channel and Learning Channel and so on, people are paying attention now all of a sudden.
Right.
And of course, we also have this Million Facts, the Million Facts March being put on by the Paradigm, what is it called? Steve Bassett's organization, Paradigm Research Group, which the intent is to catch the attention of Congress by flooding Congress with fax messages saying that the government should be like Britain and cough up their secrets on UFOs. This Million Facts effort is apparently attracting some press interest as well. So who knows, there may be a shift going on towards the subject being treated seriously.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Richard Hoagland and Mike Barra have made some startling accusations in their book, Dark Mission.
Mm-hmm.
They state that there are alien ruins both on Mars and the Moon, and they have produced photos that a former NASA engineer had been ordered to destroy, which show the remnants of glass domes on the Moon and even a robotic head laying in a field of mechanical debris. Have you heard about this, and what do you think about it?
Well, I have. They're not the first person to talk about structures on the Moon. The guy, I can't remember his name, published a book, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago about this.
Right.
But I personally tend to accept the word of Edgar Mitchell more,
right.
Saying that he would be aware if there had been actual structures on the Moon. All the astronauts would be aware of that. And none of them are aware of anything that are actual structures. There are reasons to believe that there couldn't be structures on the Moon, and I suppose reasons to believe there could be. But I don't. When you look at these pictures, you know, you start blowing up the pictures and trying to get very high spatial resolution out of pictures that have low spatial resolution. You see bright and dark areas that are adjacent to one another in various patterns and so on, or randomly, and you look at them and you may think you see a pattern there, sort of like a Rorschach test, you know, where the ink blots supposedly look like pictures of things.
Well, what do you think of that robot head that they took the close-up of?
Well, I haven't looked at that, so I'm not really sure what that looks like. I was looking at a picture recently, it was posted. Well, it was a NASA photo from last August, I think, that's recently been discussed on the internet, and it's on Mars. It looks like a long, sort of rectangular cross-section piece of wood, something dark anyway. And the argument is, well, it looks like a railroad tie. It's got square corners and all that stuff they talk about.
Right.
Therefore, it has to have been constructed. There's no way we can find out because it's not where the lander is. Can't go over to it, I guess, and take a look at it. We just have to sit there and look at pictures of it.
Yeah, there's so much of that, isn't there, where people say, well, this must be done by some race or culture, you know. You have to laugh at some of these things. Do you think that some of the photos of the moon and Mars have been airbrushed by NASA to hide evidence of ruins?
Well, you know, one can only speculate on essentially, is there a deep conspiracy to withhold information from the public? You know, NASA certainly releases tons of pictures. Some of them they release in real time. I suppose they could have an army of photo analysts out there trying to locate every picture that is definitely a picture of something that shouldn't be there. I'm not talking about ones where there might be, or if you look at it sideways with the right type of light, it looks like you have a certain or other, something or other out there. I'm talking about pictures that, no, could only either be a hoax or the real thing. There's no halfway point.
Right.
And I would tend to believe that NASA is not holding anything back. But, you know, somebody might be able to prove that there has been.
Well, let me ask you this question. Let me change this question a little bit. Have you ever come across any photos from NASA that look like they were airbrushed?
No, but then I should point out that I haven't spent that much time on NASA photos, especially the photos of photos of planets or the moon. I have the NASA photos that I have spent time on are Gemini 11 photos taken in September 1966, and the Skylab 3 photos taken in September of 1973, I believe it was. Those are photos where astronauts actually saw something going past their spacecraft or flying along with it or whatever.
I remember that.
And then they took pictures of this thing. So there's a situation where you have visual confirmation of something out there when you take that you've taken a picture of.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't that where the ground control thought that they were seeing their own booster? That it had caught up.
You're thinking Gemini 11?
Yeah.
You're thinking the Gemini 11 case thought that they were seeing a Russian booster of a proton rocket.
Right.
And that's what, if you look in the Condon study, you'll find that that's what it was claimed to be. However, I and another guy, Brad Sparks, in the early 70s, first half of the 70s, worked out the actual orbital details using some information supplied by James Oberg. We worked out the actual orbital details and located where the Gemini was and where the Proton 3 booster was. And we found that they were 3,000 miles apart. And the guys were looking at this object in the direction opposite to the direction towards the booster. So the point is that there was no way it could have been the Proton booster that they saw. And NASA itself carries that sighting as unidentified.
Have you ever gotten any photographic evidence presented to you that you felt was proof that UFOs were capable of performing beyond the parameters of any known man-made craft?
Well, yes. Not still photos, per se. Although, properly interpreted, there have been a couple of still photos, I guess, that indicate sudden accelerations. But I'm thinking in terms of couple of videos, one in particular I worked on from Gulf Breeze, Florida, back in early 90s. I forget exactly what year it was now. It's been a long time since I thought about it. But anyway, in that particular video, the person saw this thing hovering out over the water south of his house. He was living on, he or she was living on Witnesses Anonymous, but known to the MUFON investigators. Anyway, this person got a video camera, set it on a railing so he could look out over the ocean and videotape this thing. And when you see it, you're looking at this round, sort of a shiny thing, and you can vaguely see cloud or vapors, like clouds over the ocean, drifting by. And it sort of jiggles around and jiggles around, normal hand motion. And all of a sudden, it just sort of almost seems to disappear. If you're looking straight at it, you see it zip off to the right. Hmm. And when you go frame by frame, realizing that the video camera gives you, well, actually, six what are called fields, and two fields make a frame, 60 fields of a second corresponding to 30 frames per second.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit of a technicality there, but the point is you get 60 pictures every second from a at least an old-fashioned type of video camera. I'm not sure that the modern ones do it the same way. Anyway, if you look at it field by field, you can see this image move to the right a little bit in the first field, and it moves to the right more in the second field, and even more than that in the third, and even more than that in the fourth, and then by the fifth or sixth frame field, it's gone.
Mm.
So it zipped off to the right-hand side, and you can actually see the image stretch and get dim, which are things that you would expect to see if this object was moving at a sizable distance during the time of the image exposure. And what amounted to, this thing was going, I don't know, tens of G's. When they put the pedal to the metal, they put the pedal right through the metal, I think.
It looks that way.
Gone in a fifth of a second.
Wow.
And, you know, something I've played it to audiences, and I said, if you blink, you're not going to miss it.
Yeah.
Sure enough, people don't, you know, they have to be staring right at the video to watch, to see this thing move. So anyway, that's... unfortunately, we don't know how big it was or how far away it was. But if it were only 1,000 feet away and about 10 feet in diameter, then it was, you know, going at some huge speed by the time it, well, speed of sound or faster by the time it got to the edge of the frame and went off the frame of the screen.
Right, right. About 1 in 10 sightings get reported. Do you think that this is a true estimate?
Well... that's an estimate that has sort of been guessed at by the late Dr. J. Allen Hynek years ago and Stan Friedman and so on. It certainly could be true if you consider, for example, that we continually get reports of things that happened years before. In other words,
mm-hmm.
on December 2, 2008, you might get a few reports from people who saw things in 1973 and 1966 and 1982 and so on.
Right.
So you would have to say, well, those sightings happened a long time ago. They were part of a group of sightings that never got reported at that time.
Yeah.
In other words, the mere fact that we get sightings that are old means that there are sightings that haven't been reported.
Right. It's kind of odd.
Whether it's 1 in 10 or some other number, it would be hard to be specific.
Well, it seems like more of them are getting reported now, though, than, say, 40 years in the past. Do you think that's true?
That would be hard to say. The reporting system is a lot better than it used to be.
That's true.
And so we know that there were situations in the past when there were lots of sightings. 1952 was the big peak year for sightings collected by Project Blue Book, where they had over 2,000 sightings of what they estimated to be about 1,500 objects in the sky. 2,000 sighting reports of 1,500 objects, meaning there was more, typically more than one observer per object. But to say that, well, the reporting systems have changed over the last 30 or 40 years.
Right.
When the Air Force Project Blue Book was going, they were sort of the standard, I guess you might say, collecting both military and civilian sightings. The Area Phenomena Research Organization, APRO, that started in, I think, 51 or 52, collected sightings all the way until it ended in the late 80s, I think. And the NICAP, National Investigating Committee on Aerial Phenomena, that basically started in 57. I know by the time they closed in 1980, they had over 10,000 sighting reports, many of those not in the Air Force file.
Right.
So anyway, the point is that it would be hard to be quantitative and say, yes, for sure, the there are more sightings now than there were.
Yeah, it is hard.
It could be just the situation that nowadays you got the Internet, people see something and slap their sighting on the Internet, whereas in years past they'd have to look around. That's one reason why these old sightings occur, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Very often a person who says, oh, I had a sighting back in 1964, but I didn't know who to tell.
You're right. Or maybe they're so old now they don't care about the ridicule factor.
Yeah, that may be too. There's nothing they can do to me now.
Right. Some people believe that when former President Reagan said things like, the world would be an easier place if we had a common alien threat, and said this during several different speeches before the UN, that he was trying to tell us something. Do you think that's true?
Well, it may be. I mean, as a philosophical argument, it probably holds true anyway. In other words, even in the absence of UFO sighting reports, if there were suddenly to appear some threat from the outside, from some threat against humanity in general, probably humanity would figure out some way to get together. But we know, I guess for a fact, that Reagan had at least one sighting while he was flying in his airplane, and he actually diverted the pilot to fly towards this thing. I don't remember the details of the event now, but
yeah, I
think it would have been while he was governor of California back in the 70s sometime. But the fact that he had a sighting certainly suggests that he might have been trying to subtly get in to the thinking of the people who hear his speech that, maybe there is something to this after all.
Right.
He didn't say anything publicly about his sighting. It was, I think, came out through private information.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was ever reported in the paper or not.
I don't remember.
He certainly didn't mention the sighting when he was talking to the United Nations, or when he was he might have when he was talking to Gorbachev privately. We don't know what happened then.
Right. Astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell has stated that aliens exist. He has been quoted as saying, I've been in military and intelligence circles who know that beneath the surface of what has been public knowledge, yes, we have been visited. Reading the papers recently, it's been happening quite a bit. What do you think a respected astronaut would say this if it wasn't true?
Well, I don't think he would say it if it weren't true. Certainly it would be essentially stupid. I mean, he's gotten criticized for saying it, true or not. He gets criticism. So if it weren't true, why say it? I was fortunate to sit next to Edgar Mitchell at the X conference last April in Washington, D.C. There'll be another X conference coming up in Gaithersburg, Maryland, which is outside Washington, D.C.
Did he give you the tidbits?
There'll be another one next year. I don't know what the program is going to be yet, but I'm sure that this Million Facts March on Washington will be featured, whatever effects there are. And the fact that this Podesta is now Obama's secretary or something, or advisor, is that right?
I'm not sure. He's something, but I don't remember what it was.
Well, anyway, he was...
If I was guessing, I think he was an advisor.
Yeah.
I think that's what he is, but I'm not sure.
He's come out publicly in favor of release of information.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, back to Edgar Mitchell. I was sitting next to him at the X conference last spring, and basically he was telling me, you know, what he said for a number of years. He made a big splash in the press last August for what he said about knowing about alien visitations and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, he's been saying that for like 10 or 15 years. It's just that people haven't been paying any attention. The reason they paid attention back in August, I think it was, or maybe July, whenever it was he made a big splash there in the press, it was because he had said it in Britain. The British press told the story of what Edgar Mitchell was saying, and then some American correspondent in Britain picked up and never heard about this before and said, wow, look at that. And assumes that this is the first time that Edgar Mitchell's ever said anything like that. And then writes a story that gets picked up in the American press, and the American press portrays it as if, gee, Edgar Mitchell now is releasing his information, whereas in fact this is what he's been saying for 10 or 15 years.
Right.
Instead of to a number of people, including the press and radio station interviews and so on. Just nobody paid any attention. It's the old situation of no person is a prophet in his own land.
Yeah, that's
something like that. So anyway, I'm sure he wouldn't say it if it weren't true. Or if he didn't at least believe it's true.
Right.
And he was kind enough to write a little blurb in endorsing my book on the UFO-FBI connection when it came out 8 years ago.
Oh, that was nice.
And so I know that he's read about what the FBI found out. I don't know, all the other stuff he's read, but evidently, he claims that he was in Roswell, living in Roswell, and knew about this stuff when it happened.
Oh, I didn't know
the
that.
The Roswell case, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, you have to go back and check up on all the stuff that he's said. But
yeah. So that was way before he was an astronaut, I presume.
Oh, yeah.
Right. He must have been a young boy.
That's right. That's what he said. He was in Roswell. And, he wasn't directly involved with anything. He knew people who knew people who knew people who were involved.
Right.
And the Roswell, if I recall correctly, the people in Roswell always assumed it was true.
Hmm. Huh. Several sightings that were made by lots of people, took place in Stephenville, Texas. Not only were strange lights being reported, but also black triangular craft. What is your opinion of these craft? Do you think that we have a new secret plane, or that these are alien craft?
Well, I suspect that these are, at least part of this stuff is related to alien craft, or secret craft. Triangle sightings go back years, by the way.
Right, I know they do.
Into the 80s at least, and probably farther back were a few sightings. So the implication is that if there were ours, we must have years and years and years ago. And then the question would be, well, why don't more people know about it? Why are the only reports of triangle the ones that come from people who are not seeing UFOs?
Yeah, right.
I don't know that you can look through Jane's All Worlds Aircraft, and they have stories about top secret stuff.
Oh, I looked through
them. As far as I know, they don't have any triangle aircraft. They might have some triangular-shaped ultralight, not ultralights, triangle-shaped, I think there was a lifting balloon-type thing. Instead of shaped like a blimp, it was shaped like a triangle.
There's a story going around that we have a plane that we've had for a few years now. It has a solid frame. It's filled with helium to give it neutral buoyancy, and that it has some sort of a pulse jet engine that would allow this thing to go 4,000 or 5,000 miles an hour. Have you heard about that?
The pulse jet engine at 4,000 or 5,000 miles an
right,
hour, yes, but not something that's got. I mean, to have neutral buoyancy requires that the volume of the gas that's inside be huge. It has to be some number of cubic feet per pound that you're going to lift. So.
Well, this is supposed to be.
Yeah, that's why those old blimps and so on were so big. The blimp
right.
was huge compared to the.
Well, they say that the black triangle. They said a black triangular craft is huge. at least that's what I heard.
Right, and but that if there the observations of this black triangle craft, for example, one that impresses me is the guy who was the air traffic controller along Taconic River Parkway in 1984. 4 or 5 or whenever it was, they had the sighting of an object traveling southward over the Taconic River Parkway north of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the flap, around Brewster, New York, back in the 80s. Anyway, there was one night, I forget when it was, it's in a book called Night Siege by Hynek and Brogno. The Taconic River Parkway is a 4-lane highway running north, south from running north from New York City up to a place called Brewster, New York,
mm-hmm.
through Bedford, New York, and so on, the bedroom communities of New York City. The Tacoma River Parkway runs along, roughly along the parallel to the Hudson River. Anyway, there was one night where there was this object flying southward over the Tacoma River Parkway, seen by thousands of people as they drove by, I guess. One guy got out of his car. He was an air traffic controller, if I recall correctly. He got out of his car, stood next to this road, next to his car, and saw this thing go overhead. He couldn't hear any sound, or nothing more than a slight humming noise, maybe. And he said he could see structure, like bolts and rivets and stuff like that. But he couldn't hear anything, and he didn't think it was very high up. It was huge. I think that's the same night that it went over the Indian River power plant. But the point is, there was hardly any noise. Now, any propulsion mechanism that we use for aircraft makes use of explosions. I think that's correct. Either you got a continuous explosion, such as goes on a turbine, or you have pulsed explosions that go on in a propeller-driven aircraft. And therefore, they make noise. Like this thing that flew over the Taconic River Parkway was, quote, explained, unquote, by the skeptics as being a group of ultralight aircraft that were flying wing-to-wing at night.
Hmm.
And if you believe that, you probably believe that you can buy part of the Brooklyn Bridge still, as whatever's left.
Well, it just so happens that a very good friend of mine was there and saw it.
Oh, is that so?
Yes, he saw it. He was telling me about it, and what happened was he saw there was people pulled over on the Taconic Parkway, and he was wondering what was going on. So he pulled over, he looked up, and he saw it. It was overhead. Yeah. But what?
Well, I mean, you probably know more about it than I do.
Well, I don't know that much, but what I had heard to get back to that black aircraft was that it had two propulsion systems, and that one of them was electric, so that when it was able to go extremely slow and silently, and then when it switched on the pulse jet, it just shot away. You know?
Yeah. Well, this is, so far as I know, this is speculation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what electric propulsion would work. You still got to support this thing somehow or other. If it were a blimp type of support, if it were a gas bag support, then you wouldn't expect it to be able to go very fast, because it would be a very large volume item carrying whatever weight was necessary to drive it.
Right, right.
The closest you could get to an electric support system might be the so-called, a large version of the so-called lifters that have been popular in the last 10 or 15 years, where you have a high voltage
mm-hmm.
connected to a quote, craft, unquote, very lightweight, something or other, and you're using what's known as ion propulsion, where you ionize the atmosphere and cause the atmosphere to sort of blow away from you. It's an action-reaction type of propulsion, but it's...
Yeah, it's still in the very early stages.
Yeah, but... developmental, you can read about it on the internet. Lifters.
Do you ever collaborate with other UFO investigators on investigating sightings? And if so, can you tell us about one?
Well, yeah, sure. I very often, people contact me and they want me to do something or other, like look at some photos or something. That's what's happened most often in recent years in previous case investigations. I had to get help from local MUFON investigators. I remember one case that turned out to be solvable, but it was like 15 years ago, where some people got a video of a craft over New York City, and they were absolutely astounded that they were seeing this thing, and got good video of it, and you could hear them in the background. The lady was talking about all the money they were going to make on the video, and the guy was very skeptical about, the guy who was actually taking the video, her husband was actually skeptical about it, saying, you know, how could this be happening, and weren't the only people seeing it?
Yeah, right.
Well, based on the descriptions of the witnesses and their video, there was no doubt that they were seeing something, and the video showed it. The question was, what was it? And, I had to request help from a guy, I forget his name now, in New York City, to go and talk to the witnesses and look out the window that they were videotaping and so on. And gradually it became apparent, you know, that what they were looking at with their videotape was a lighted blimp.
Mm.
They were looking over Shea Stadium. And there had been a blimp, an advertising blimp there at the time. It was just far enough away so they couldn't see it and identify it. But when they used a camera and zoomed in, you know, you could see some sort of an odd light structure. It didn't look like a, well, vaguely like a blimp, I guess you could say. But the light structure turned out to be 103 feet long. Once I knew from the guy who was working there, he was able to get me a map so I could measure the distance between the place they were videotaped from and the Shea Stadium, where we knew there was a blimp. And we knew the characteristics of the blimp, the length of it, the diameter, and all that sort of stuff. Then I took the image on the video and had him calibrate their video camera by taking a yardstick out of the 30 feet or something like that and giving me an angle calibration for the video camera. Then I projected that angle from their window over to the Shea Stadium and calculated what the size of the object would have to be to make that image an image as big as it was on the screen, on the video screen, and sure enough, it kind of came out about 105 or something feet. Things are always fuzzy. They're never perfectly accurate, but it was definitely very close to what the actual length of the blimp was. And the blimp was going back and forth, and in the video, you see this object going back and forth, you know. So that was a situation where it would have been difficult to figure out what was going on without the help of a local investigator.
Right.
That was about 10 years ago, I think, and at a time when there was a rash of blimp sightings, as a matter of fact. There was one in Florida, and there's a video from China on the Internet that I'm quite sure, based on the shape and the way the object moves, it was actually a distant blimp in China.
Mm.
It was a company called the Virgin Lightship Corporation.
Yeah, I know that.
I was very proud of the fact that their blimp, internally lighted blimps, were attracting so much attention and being misidentified as UFOs.
Right. Many skeptics think that UFOs don't exist at all or can be explained. In a recent released UFO document from the UK, it was found that a U.S. pilot based in the UK was sent up with orders to shoot down a UFO. He's still alive today and lives in Florida. He has stated that when he saw the UFO, it was about a mile in diameter, and it vanished before he could shoot. If the U.S. Air Force doesn't believe in UFOs, what do you think they sent up a plane to shoot one down? And what do you think the pilot saw?
Well, as I recall the story, he didn't see anything with his eyes. It was on radar, a large radar target. I might be wrong on that, but that's my recollection from his testimony. And it disappeared before he got to where this thing was or where he would have been able to see it. But there is a question of why would if the Air Force thought that he was going after a true UFO, that is something from out there, why would they send him up to shoot it down? We know that in 1952 there were orders to shoot down any flying saucers that didn't land. Try to force the saucer to land, and if it doesn't land, you try to shoot it down. There's a testimony from a man whom we call Hawk at my website, which, by the way, is http://brumac.8k.com, brumac.8k.com. If you look for the article titled about Hawk, Hawk Tales. And you'll see that in his testimony in 1958, he was a weather officer on duty in Japan, and he was in a radar air traffic control center there for the Air Force, the 5th Air Force or whatever it was in Japan. He was there at the time when they sent up a plane to shoot at a flying saucer that was hovering, and the plane got swallowed up by a saucer or something happened to it. It disappeared anyway. But the point is that they were ordered to try to shoot it down. And so somebody inside there must think that these things are real. I don't know why they would try messing with them at all.
That's a very good question.
Saucers have demonstrated superior technology. It would seem to me that we would maybe observe and then split real fast.
Well, Not only that, when you even if it was only seen on radar, when you see something that's a mile in diameter, you know right away that it's nothing that anybody from planet put up.
That's similar to, Boyer, they got a pilot of an aircraft in the spring of 2007.
Over the Channel Islands, is that what you're talking about?
Over the Channel Islands, uh-huh. Right, talking about a large, a huge orange-colored, was it?
Right, two pilots saw that one, you know.
Yeah, and I was in a situation, that was not a situation where somebody was ordered to fire on the thing.
Right.
But he could tell from the size of this object and so on that it was nothing normal. Yeah, I met him at the, he was at the conference a year ago. November, the conference that the Coalition for Freedom of Information put on here in Washington, D.C. The one that I mentioned earlier had a whole bunch of pilots and was almost ignored by the press. I mean, there's been a lot of attempts, not just the Disclosure Project, but a lot of attempts by organizations, including the Fund for UFO Research. The Fund for UFO Research held a press conference, it was in 1987. We had a special briefing for Congress, and we were in one of the buildings, I forget which one it was, on Capitol Hill, a number of congressional aides showed up. No actual congressmen showed up so far as I know, but a number of congressional aides showed up and listened to us talk about sightings and the Roswell case and so on. So there have been a lot of attempts to get the Congress interested in doing something, and press conferences to over the years. I remember the press conferences back in the late 70s when the documents from the CIA were released. And these referred to cases that were in the CIA file. We also discussed the files of the FBI, which had been released back in 1977. And other documents from the Air Force at press conferences, and you get a little story. When I did the investigation for the New Zealand sightings of December 31st, 1978, I actually went to New Zealand and talked to the witnesses and analyzed the video, the color movie film that was there, and listened to their tapes and put together a whole history of the sighting. And then in March of 1979, we held a press conference in New York City and basically said at the press conference that there was something that was unusual that had been flying around the New Zealand area, and we had color movie film of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so shouldn't people be interested?
Yeah.
And one reporter, there were questions from the reporters after we gave our initial briefing, of course, at the press conference. And one guy asked, couldn't this possibly be American some secret aircraft, is basically what it was saying. Well, I had already talked about how we had ruled out all types of aircraft, and the New Zealand government had ruled out all types of aircraft and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said something like, well, that's a stupid question.
He must have loved that.
What I had said.
Jeez, I better be careful.
A stupid question.
I better be careful when I ask you.
And the people who were with me, people put on a press conference where it was a TV station in Australia that had supported this investigation. And one of the reporters and the people who are, I said, running the press conference told me afterwards that they cringed when they heard me tell a reporter that he asked a stupid question. They agreed that it was a stupid question, but I said, you just don't do that, you know. Reporters might get mad and leave, and then you don't have any story.
Well, you know what the problem is with all the UFO organizations? They don't have any lobbyists.
Yeah, right. Steve Bassett, I guess, is the closest to being a lobbyist for the UFO cause nowadays.
The incident that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest has always fascinated me. An incident occurred in 1980 where a UFO was seen on the ground by U.S. military personnel from Woodbridge Air Force Base. Even a deputy commander of the base, Colonel Charles Holt, saw it. What do you think was going on there?
Well, I think there's another situation where some craft of other intelligences wants to attract a little bit of attention without being around long enough to absolutely prove its existence. And, you know, some of the guys on the base saw lights out in the woods and thought an aircraft had landed, so they figured they better go out and check. This guy Peniston and a few others, a couple others, I forget their names now. But Peniston and Hald, I've met directly. And
oh, have you?
They were at the press conference of the Coalition for Freedom of Information, CFI, which, by the way, you can find on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
The CFI conference last year, Hald and Peniston were there, and you know, Peniston talked about walking up to this machine and actually touching it. That takes some guts.
Yeah, I would say
either
so.
That
yeah.
Either that or total naivety. He didn't know anything about UFOs, so I don't know what he thought this he was looking at, but...
Lucky it wasn't radioactive.
Yeah, right, or electrical. Yeah. I mean, he could have been short-circuiting the object to ground.
Yeah, right.
It might have been the positive terminal of a big battery, for all he knew.
That's right. Yeah.
Anyway, he saw markings on it, made drawings. He had his little notebook with him when he was at the conference a year ago. The little notebook that he had carried with him, which showed these symbols and stuff, and his various notes and the holes made mm-hmm. by the object. That they found it was if it was some weight on the ground. Anyway, Rendlesham is definitely an interesting case. You know, what they were doing, I don't know, other than just proving that they exist.
Yeah, I think it's one of the hardest cases there is to explain.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's got a multiple witness situation. You got Charles Halt's audio tape made at the time. Now, you know, it's been as, quote, explained, unquote, as a navigation beacon. The Orford Ness beacon or something, I forget what the name of it is.
Yeah, you're talking about the lighthouse.
The lighthouse, 5 miles away or something,
uh-huh.
some number of miles away.
Yeah, well, that was disproven, you know, because what happened was they found that they thought they were in the spot where they had saw the object, but they weren't, because later on, one of them pointed out that he had been going to a different spot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're aware of that or not.
Yeah, I've heard about that situation, but of course, only the true believing skeptics, that is, believe that there's nothing going on, could have accepted that all these people would have misidentified
a lighthouse beam,
this beacon, a lighthouse several miles away that would give you a pulse of light, you know, every
that is so
or whatever
true.
It was.
That is so true. They, you know, and it was a park ranger, a British park ranger that said that, and he apologized later on. And when he saw that it was in a different place, he realized you couldn't see the light from there.
Yeah, right.
Some people have reported being abducted over and over by aliens, and even have reported objects implanted under their skin. Dr. Lear in California has removed many of these objects and has found that they seem to give off radio signals when they're in the body. He told me that once he removes them, they go dead, and therefore seem to draw power directly from our body's electrical system. Do you believe this is possible, and that people are being tagged so their movements could be checked?
Well, let's put it like this. I don't think it's impossible. Certainly we've had abduction stories of various types. Well, starting with V.S. Boas, who became a lawyer in later years, but V.S. Boas in Brazil, in 1958, I think, and then the next big one was Betty and Barney Hill in September 1961, and then other stories of people. There's even in the FBI file there's a story of a guy who called up the FBI at 4:30 in the morning to report what nowadays would be called an abduction. He didn't call it that at the time. He didn't know what it was. But anyway, the point is, I believe abductions are going on. Things are happening. And people are being examined. So the next step to put a tag in somebody, something like we now put in under the skin of animals
mm-hmm.
that can be read by a electromagnetic sensor device, a so-called R radio frequency identification tag or something. Something like that could certainly be done. By a higher technology, they could do it even better. And to be able to run off our own electrical systems, well, that's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
You've got electrical charges, and you could set up a battery inside your body if you wanted to provide power.
Right.
So the possibility of them sending, putting in something that uses power in the, from the body to send out a signal, I think could be done. We may not be able to do it right now, but something that probably could be done with nanotechnology in the near future.
Yeah, we're talking about using it for pacemakers.
Whether the aliens are actually doing it or not, of course, is a matter of speculation.
That's right.
And, Rogers' discovery, I didn't know that he had said that these things were could pick up radio signals. I'm not absolutely sure what he's claiming. It sends out a radio signal that you can detect or something like that. I'm not sure.
We talking about Dr. Lear?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said that they do send out radio signals. And what he did was, when he first discovered them, he found that they were magnetic, and he used a powerful magnet. You could see them pulling against the person's skin when you put the magnet over it.
Now, I have seen that when I was at the Roswell party, not last year, but the year before. The 50th anniversary. 2007.
Right.
There was a man there whose name escapes me at the time, but he was being videotaped by a couple of people to do a documentary, and he claimed that he had this lump under his skin and had it for a long time, and that it was attracted to a magnet. So we got some magnet, a strong magnet, put it next to his finger, and sure enough, you could see something move and actually pull outwards as if it was trying to get out through his skin.
Right.
It was bizarre because obviously skin doesn't do that.
That's right. Well, what's even more bizarre was when Dr. Lear tried to get these things out, they would move away from the scalpel.
Yeah, he said that too. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of creepy. In 1993, the UK experienced several UFO sightings that involved hundreds of witnesses. UFOs flew over several military bases. They were seen on radar and reported by witnesses to be about 200 meters in diameter. Interceptors were set up but couldn't get near the UFOs. Do you have an opinion on this? Do you think maybe that these UFOs were concentrating on the nuclear facilities on these bases?
Are you saying this is when now?
This is in 1993.
Well, I don't recall the specific details of that particular flap, but, you know, could they be doing reconnaissance on nuclear bases? Now, that's another question, because it's not just illustrated by what happened in Britain, what you're talking about, but people have speculated that the onset of flying saucer sightings in 1947 was as a result of the bombs going off in 1945 and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then there certainly have been sightings near the Hanford plant in the state of Washington, where they do refining of nuclear materials.
You have one of the early reactors, you know.
Back in the late 40s and early 50s, the Air Force was really worried about sightings of so-called green fireballs near sensitive, so-called sensitive installations, or what the FBI called vital installations, which was code word for nuclear research locations like Los Alamos and so on. The Taconic River Parkway stuff that your friend talked to you about, associated with those sightings, was the case of the object hovering over the Indian River power plant.
Right.
And the guards in the Indian River plant were allowed to talk about it for about a day or two, and then they were told to shut up. So there's information there that is being kept confidential we don't know about, but one of them testified that one guy had seen this thing outside hovering over the plant. He calls up one of the guards on the inside who's controlling the surveillance cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy controlling the surveillance camera said he turned his camera so he could see. He had it pointed out one way so he could see the left, let's say, the left edge of the object. And then he started turning the camera to find the other edge of the object. He turned and he turned and he turned and he turned. Finally, just before he reaches the maximum turn, he finally gets to the other edge of the object. It was almost 180 degrees away.
Boy, that's some big object.
The thing was bigger than the plant itself and hovering so low that he could just barely see one edge, see the two edges with his camera. The point is that they have been associated with nuclear installations over the years. There have been certainly associations also with missile launch locations.
Right.
And most of the missile launch locations have nuclear aspects to them because they're going to launch nuclear missiles. So there is definitely a connection there.
Do you think that cattle mutilations have anything to do with UFOs? Do you think there's something sinister going on there, like maybe the government is checking to see the radiation level in cattle since most of these things occur in the Midwest where there's been nuclear testing?
Well, that sort of is the nuclear testing and cattle being sensitive to radiation and so on because they're eating grass that could be contaminated and all that. That might be possible for some things, but you know, there's only so many cases of mutilations where animals are found dead with no tracks anywhere,
mm-hmm.
with no blood. Why in the world would they be trying to drain an animal of blood if they're trying to track nuclear stuff? All they got to do is kill the animal, chop off a piece of it, and examine a chunk of flesh or something. Take the time to core out rectums and pick on various sexual organs, whether male or female, and so on. And then if these animals are not killed in a normal manner and left in the field, you know, all sorts of vermin and other animals and so on will come and chew them up quickly. Experiments, I remember on TV, an experiment was done to find out how long it would take for a deer carcass, I think it was, to disappear. And it took, they killed the deer, nailed it to the ground, left the camera watching it.
I saw that.
It was 3 or 4 days or something like that. It was reduced to bones because everything from ants to animals
yeah.
attacked it.
Well, it's a funny.
The point is that I doubt that the bulk of what are classified cattle mutilations have anything to do with tracking of radiation by the U.S. government or satanic cults making precision cuts and stuff like that, and being able to do this from airborne craft too, and wiping out cattle without leaving any trace other than the cattle. The cow or whatever itself. And then, of course, there are a few cases where you actually have witnesses seeing something being pulled up or dropped down or whatever. So I suspect that these cattle mutilations are related to alien stuff. And I make the same speculation with respect to crop circles.
Mm-hmm.
The real agriglyphs, pictures drawn in agricultural growth, corn, beans, wheat, whatever. Most of that happens in England. I don't know why, but certainly it's a worldwide phenomenon. And recently we saw A.J. Gavard in Brazil reported what he said was the first agriglyph in Brazil, a couple of concentric circles in wheat, or some type of wheat, that were laid down in a typical agriglyph manner without a very sharp edge to where the grass grows, the stuff grows tall and straight versus where it's lying down, unbroken branches, stalks, and
mm-hmm.
the things that have been come to characterize what I call the true agriglyphs, as opposed to the things where somebody goes around stomping with a board, the Doug and Dave Chorley method.
Yeah, right. Some people have said that the Bush administration is the most secretive one in history. What's your opinion of this? Do you think it's harder to get UFO data now than it was before?
Well, first of all, I don't think they're the most secretive in history. I think that's a lot of hype
mm-hmm.
for political purposes. But who cares now anyway? It was Clinton in the late 90s who signed Executive Order 12953 or something that was supposedly, whatever the number was supposed to release stuff that was more than 25 years old if it was secret level, and 35 years or something if it was top secret, or I don't remember exact parameters, but supposedly mm-hmm. it was going to reduce the amount of classified information. And they had the rule that if you were in doubt as to whether it should be classified or not, whereas previously if you were in doubt, you would classify it. Now they were going to say, if you're in doubt, declassify it. That didn't last too long, as I recall.
Mm.
And then when Bush took over, he sort of went back to the if when in doubt, classify type of. So that may be why the opponents were saying it's the most secretive ever. Anyway, the top secret stuff has never been released. There must be some.
Mm-hmm.
Except for, I don't know, maybe I could name a couple of documents. Let's say a handful, maybe, over the last 60 years that have been released. And whether they will ever be released or not, I don't know. There are stories about whether the president himself is in a position to learn about UFOs.
Right.
And things might get better under this Obama administration, but I'm sure Obama has plenty of stuff to worry about besides UFOs.
Oh, I'm sure he does. Yeah. The British and U.S. government cooperate very closely. What do you think the U.S. might have said to them before they released their UFO data? Do you think, like, maybe we might have tried to say to them, don't do it, or something of that nature?
I doubt it. I could well imagine the British government, especially on things like that document having to do with Torres, the pilot who was going to shoot down something.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if the British government had checked back with the American government, somebody in the government, to say, should we release this because it involves your people? In other words, where they were releasing stuff that involved Americans. Or maybe they check with Canada or Germany or France, you know, if they're releasing stuff related to other countries. But the stuff was related to Britain only. I would be surprised if they had said anything. Remember, all the stuff that they're releasing is just stories. There's nobody releasing hard evidence.
Mm-hmm.
The government, U.S. government, hasn't released a piece of the Roswell crash. I don't know if Britain has anything comparable or not, or Germany or France or Brazil or whatever, but. Nobody has released anything that I'm aware of, anyway, which can definitely be tied with a flying saucer type of, or ET craft, and at the same time can be shown to be completely anomalous.
Right, right.
So, a long time ago, this lady that I was told about who supposedly examined a creature from non-human creature, not from the earth. Being an anatomist, she knew where you know that it wasn't anything normal, and she had all this information about it. After she did the examination, she was told to forget about the whole thing, and she says, "Well, yeah, but I know about this stuff," and they tell her, "Well, yeah, but when you leave without any hard evidence at all. It's just a story, and stories can always be explained."
Yeah, right, right. In other words, they make her look like a fool.
Yeah.
One British UFO report talks about a 78-year-old man who supposedly was taken on a craft by aliens and then thrown off because they said he was too old and too infirm for their purpose. Do you think that reports like this could be included to make us think that all the reports are just a bunch of nonsense?
Well, what do you mean, reports like that included?
Yeah, in the release.
Report going back many years, and the actual guy was interviewed, I believe.
Yeah.
In other words, the story has been reported in UFO Flying Saucer Review or something like that years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the aliens, and they have to have something like, they're only going to look at people with... that are young enough to be able to, I don't know, procreate or whatever. Maybe that guy was just too old to do anything gynecological, sex, let's say.
Yeah.
Since there's so many cases of reports of abductions involving abductions during which they do some sort of sexual-related testing, that seems to be some key aspect of whatever they're doing. If they find somebody who's too old to do anything, then it might well be that they reject the person. I think either Dave Jacobs or Bud Hopkins, I think maybe Jacobs has said that if you're not abducted by the time you're 10, you're not going to be.
Hmm.
Point being that you can be abducted numerous times over your life, but they start while you're still fertile.
Hmm. Yeah, that, I never heard that one, but it makes sense, doesn't it? A very famous UFO investigator, who I'm not going to mention, he told me that he once met an alien. If I tell you who it was, you'd be very surprised. But what do you think of that statement?
Well, I certainly can't confirm or deny it.
No, I know that.
If aliens are around, I remember Whitley talking about being in a bookstore after his book Communion came out and being freaked out by a couple of people, or that seemed to be people. On the other hand, he got the definite impression that they might be aliens checking up on his book or something like, that. I'm not aware of either Dave Jacobs or Bud Hopkins saying that they have actually met an alien. But of course, aliens in abduction stories are, you meet the alien in the abduction story. But,
right.
But I have to say, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody had met an alien.
Well, this person told me that he met somebody who looked entirely human, but the reason that he felt they were alien was because they contacted him using telepathy.
Yeah, well, that certainly would prove to him that there's something strange going on.
Do you think that the world is on the verge of some UFO mega event, as some people have postulated?
Well, I suppose it could be. It might not be something that happens, you know, in a 24-hour period or even over a few weeks, but I think this situation of more and more information on the Internet and TV shows that seem to be taking this more and more seriously could be the mega event unfolding before our very eyes, really ultimately resulting in general admission that, yeah, they're here, and now what do we do about it? Or do we do anything?
Mm-hmm.
That general admission is coming as a trickle-up admission. I've often felt that, you know, as soon as more than 50% of the people are witnesses, or maybe 70% or 80%, you name the percentage, somebody will stand up and say, hey, look, they're real. This is what I call the king has no clothes effect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Somebody will stand up and say, hey, they're real, and everybody else will say, oh, yeah, that's right. We knew that all along.
Some naval ships seem to have had more than their share of UFO events. Many crew members have come forward with stories of UFO sightings and UFO events. One was said to have occurred in 1971 that affected the carrier John F. Kennedy. It was said to be a UFO hovering over the ship that was causing many of the instruments to go haywire. Have you ever heard of reports like this?
I don't recall that specific one, although it could be something that was reported somehow or other years ago, and I don't recall. There certainly have been sightings at sea by the Navy. One that's on my website goes all the way back to 1904, I think it was. Sighting of three glowing objects traveling along underneath the clouds and then suddenly going, shooting stuff up into the sky. And that's an article called Remarkable Meteors at my website.
Mm-hmm.
I presume you can put my website on the on your website or something.
Oh, sure, sure.
Anyway,
I'll put a link in the story. I always do that.
The Remarkable Meteor story was a Navy report that got mm-hmm. published in a magazine called the Monthly Weather Review, and with a title, Remarkable Meteors, because that's all they knew about the column. And yet mm-hmm. these meteors managed to change direction. That doesn't sound like meteoric to me.
Yes.
Anyway, in the 1952 time frame, September 52, there were Operation Main Brace sightings. Main Brace was a American and British, maybe some other countries, I'm not sure, being involved in maneuvers in the Northern Arctic Ocean, or Northern Atlantic Ocean. And on several days, they had things of these disc-shaped craft flying over. It got reported at least in UFO publications. I don't know if it got reported at all in the general media, but apparently there were some people who had some pretty good sightings then.
Mm-hmm.
The Brazilian Navy, of course, had its sighting of the Trindade case, which resulted in photos that were publicized in Brazil and actually endorsed as being real photos by the Brazilian government.
I think,
wasn't that
the one where the president was on one of the ships? The Brazilian president?
No, there was one ship, I forget the name of the ship, I can't pronounce it anyway.
Yeah.
There was one ship, there was a professional photographer on board to take photos of the Navy activities during the International Geophysical Year, IGY, which was 1958. And for several nights, or several days, they had magnetic events and sightings. And finally, during one of these sightings, they called a professional photographer, and he came up and took four or five photographs, four of which show this object, which looks like the planet Saturn, actually. if you know what Saturn looks like with the rings.
Yes, I do.
This thing looks roughly like that. Anyway, Trindade Island case, which is can be looked up on the Internet. That involved the Brazilian Navy. I know that there have been some reports that were from the time of the Vietnam War, the late 60s. And I don't know how many other cases of Navy reports there are. There may be a lot of stuff that the Navy is having in the Navy that just never, doesn't get out.
I'm sure. I'm sure. We're constantly hearing about crashed UFOs. Does it stand to reason that a race or races that would be so advanced that they could travel between the stars and would have so many crashes? After all, our airline industry has been estimated to be making over 49,000 flights per day and only has a few crashes.
Yeah, well, I don't know how many crashes. I know there have been a lot of reports of crashes. That doesn't mean that we believe that all those reports are true.
That's for sure.
The Aztec case, for example, was supposedly a major one, a second after Roswell, and although there has been some evidence dug up that suggests something might happen, I don't think anybody's pinned the tail on a donkey yet there. Ryan Wood has written a book that came out a couple of years ago about all the crashes that he was able to dig up, including one that I worked on with the case reported by Air Force Colonel Robert Willingham, which happened sometime in 58, I think it was, just across the border from across the Rio Grande River in Mexico, not far from Del Rio, I guess it was. I forget exactly. There's a book out on it. On this particular case, I think it's called The Other Roswell. Anyway, that sounds like a pretty good case. It's, unfortunately, it only involves one witness. But it did involve a witness collecting some material and supposedly having it tested and having that material stolen by the government.
Right.
Anyway, there are a couple of, I guess, such crashes that one can talk about. Supposedly one in the Plains of San Augustine at the same time as the Roswell case, where it's the Plains of San Augustine story are correct, and the government got a whole thing with aliens at the same time, essentially they're getting whatever landed at Roswell.
Right.
So anyway, there's maybe a handful of cases. Now, does that mean that it's ridiculous to talk about so many crashes because they're so great? Well, the aliens can make mistakes too, I suppose.
I guess so.
Who knows what stresses their craft may experience in our atmosphere and so on.
Right.
Maybe that they're pushing their technology to be able to do what they do. And whenever you push technology beyond its rated capabilities, you have to expect things to go wrong. So I don't think that there have been hundreds of crashes, but there might have been a handful or a dozen or something over the years.
I'm just going to ask you a couple more questions on the graphics programs, then I'll let you go. I know you must be getting tired. Is it possible that a genuine film of a UFO could look like a hoax under certain circumstances?
Of course, that's the reverse question.
Yeah.
The question is a hoax look like a real one.
Yeah, I know. It's the opposite.
Can you make a real one look like a hoax?
No, not
by accident. Does it by accident look
By accident,
hoax?
Yeah, right.
Yes. I suppose it certainly could, if it were super crisp and the object moved in some way or some dynamical aspects of the object suggest that it could only have been done by CGI, computer-generated imagery or something. You could be unlucky, I guess. And, of course, the skeptics would say that all the film, all the photos, all the videos of UFOs are actually, none of them are real.
Mm.
They all look like hoaxes.
Right.
Of course, the one that I've spent, I guess, the most time on is McMinnville photos of 1950 in McMinnville, Oregon, taken by Paul Trent, seen by Trent and his wife. And there have been some good documentaries on that recently. And by the way, I don't know if you're interested in this case or not.
I'm interested in all cases.
Life magazine recently posted on the Internet a whole bunch of pictures taken at the time of those, just after those photos.
Mm-hmm.
Pictures of the Trents and their farm and so on. And those pictures coming back to us after 60 years have answered a few questions that were raised in terms of our attempt to reconstruct the Trent farm.
Mm-hmm.
So they provided information that's been essentially withheld since 1950.
Wow.
Anyway, the pictures are nice because the image is so well defined. It's either the real thing or a hoax. And skeptics believe that there is no such thing as a real thing are saying, well, this looks to me like a hoax.
Yeah, of course.
And the only problem is to prove that it's a hoax. As I have pointed out, there's nothing in the pictures that absolutely prove it's a hoax. So you end up having to rely on the contextual evidence, the story behind it.
Mm.
So if somebody brings me a film or photos that are actually real but look like a hoax, I suppose you could, for example, be unlucky and take a picture of an object. Let's say in the Trent case, they had taken a picture of an object that's beneath wire. It definitely appears beneath overhead wires. So the hoax hypothesis would be you hang it from this object, a model from with a very thin string, you hang it from the wires. There is no such image of a string available in the Trent photos. But suppose they had been unlucky and there had been a tall, thin branch of a bush or something growing upwards that went through the image of the UFO and upwards to the wires.
Exactly.
then you could say, well, it was a real UFO, but somehow this branch makes it look like the UFO is hanging from the wires. That could be a strange situation, but one might imagine something unlucky like that, or maybe a scratch on the Internet on the negative that looked like a string or something.
Are there any particular effects that people use to disguise these fraudulent pictures that you look for?
Well, it depends on the type of picture, of course, and it depends on whether it's old-fashioned photography using film or new-fashioned using digital cameras. If you use digital cameras, you really have to track each pixel and see if the pixels change uniformly, let's say, from one image to another in the scene, or if there's some sudden jump in brightness or sudden jump in temper and color or something like that that gives you the hint that, there isn't a continuum here. Instead, there's something's been inserted with an abrupt change of background. Usually, I guess you catch the hoaxes by looking at the background rather than the UFO image itself. Unless there's something about the UFO image which is so obviously a hoax. I don't know what that would be necessarily. If you have something like extremely sharp image of a UFO embedded in a picture which all the other background images are fuzzy, you might say, well, this looks to me like a situation where the UFO was so close to the camera that you focused on the UFO or inserted the UFO that was well focused, and the background was out of focus because the camera was focused up close. It would be a small thing close to the camera instead of always being a big thing way out a long distance away.
Well, those artifacts you get when you cut out something and then paste it.
Yeah. Alternative would be the background is in good focus and the UFO image itself is fuzzy.
Right.
Now, if that situation occurs, you look at the way the fuzziness occurs. If it's an out-of-focus type of fuzziness, it should be fuzzy the same amount on all edges. If it's fuzzy because if something is moving, then you can look to see if the fuzziness is greatest along the leading and lagging edges of the motion.
Last question. If you can say, and I don't expect you to go into any detail or anything like that, has the government ever asked you to analyze a UFO photograph?
The government has not asked me to analyze a UFO photograph or movie or anything.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. McAbee. That was a very...
And they don't dare because I tell everybody else.
That was a very interesting interview.